Jake Ryan returned to practice this week after dealing much of training camp with a hamstring injury. Ryan was on track to start at middle linebacker. That's no longer a guarantee. So what now?
I have to get better every single day. I have to do my job, and, you know, that's not for me to decide. That's for the coach to decide. I'm going to do what I can do to, you know, get back on the field right now.
I'm Bill Scott. I'll have more from Titletown later on the Wisconsin Radio Network.
And in WRJN Sports, the Chicago Cubs defeated the Fighting Friars of San Diego 5-3 last night, taking down the Padres in Game 2 and becoming the first team in the Major League to 80 wins.
Baseball season's underway. Well, you better get ready for
Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today.
Go Cubs, go! Go Cubs, go! Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today.
13 minutes until 10 o'clock on your hump day morning. This is your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host, Glenn Klein, and he is the author of the incredible book on the Rolling Stones, The Sun and the Moon and the Rolling Stones, and the number one Chicago Cubs fan in the great state of Connecticut. Please welcome back to WRJN, Mr. Rich Cohn. Rich!
Hey, great to talk to you. You know, it's funny, you play that, you know, you hear that song every time the Cubs win, and it's, you know, from here, from Connecticut, to watch everybody staying at Wrigley Field and sort of hanging out and partying after the game is over.
Yeah.
And playing that song. But that song, you know, that's a Steve Goodman song?
Yes.
Who's from Park Ridge, I believe, where Hillary Clinton is from. And I believe John Wayne Gacy's from the near area, too.
Yeah.
Or lived there. And this is, to me, the trajectory of a Cubs fan, of the life of a Cubs fan, which is he wrote that song, and he wrote a couple other songs, and then he wrote, just about 12 years after Go Cubs Go, he wrote A Dying Cubs Fan's Last Request.
And then when he died, he had his ashes thrown over the left field wall.
I remember the debate. Well, I remember there being a discussion about whether or not he should actually be buried somewhere in the field. Because I think the song's a little contradictory. I think it calls for both. And they decided it was sort of, Wrigley Field was already haunted. You know, he didn't need another haunting there. But to me, it's like, that's like the Cubs fan plus experience. It's Go Cubs Go. 12 years of watching the Cubs. It's Dying Cubs Fan's Last Request. But I'm hoping that this year finally makes that first song the one that stands for all time.
What do you think that the over and under is for the amount of dead Cub fans that have had their ashes thrown over the bleachers onto the field at Wrigley Field?
I think probably over 500.
I would take the over on that, for sure.
You know, it's like, now though that they've done the refurbishing, it would be a much harder, because they have to clear those big scoreboards.
Well, you could.
You need a really severe. What I love about the song "Dying Cubs Fan's Last Request" is it sort of immortalizes the team that I grew up with, which is a line in where one of the things he wants to happen on the day of his funeral is to Keith Moreland to drop a routine fly ball in right field.
Just for old times' sake.
Yeah.
Well, not only is Steve Goodman from the Park Ridge area, Hillary Clinton, who very well may be our next president before she's indicted. She not only grew up in Park Ridge, but she went to Maney's High School that your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host also went to.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. See, so our number one alum, Hillary Rodham. Number two, Harrison Ford. Number three, the late actress Karen Black. And I think I'm like tied for fourth.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I went to New Trier, and we have the biggest range because we had Rahm Emanuel, who went to Nutria West, and Donald Rumsfeld. So we span. We have Liz Phair and Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston. Take that gun out of his
right
cold dying.
And Rock Hudson. This is like my wife always tells me, as soon as New Chirp comes up, I give her the list of celebrity, almost all actors. You know, if this guy won a Nobel Prize, I'm sure they did. No one cares. But if we're talking about Rock Hudson, then we're talking. You know,
if you're talking about Rock Hudson, now we're talking with Rich Cohn. He is a Nutria East or Nutria West?
Well, when I would have gone to East. My brother and sister both went to East, but by the time I was there, they had recombined. Actually, I remember my brother was there. There was a big contest to come up with a mascot because it was Nutria was the Indians and Nutria West was the Cowboys, and my brother had this great idea, which was called the Lake Trout, because it actually involved the colors from both schools. But they went with Trevians, even though no one really knows what a Trevian is.
What is a Trevian?
I was told it's a drunken Roman soldier.
Well, that's a good name for somebody from Wilmette and Winnetka.
Yeah.
He's Rich Cohn. He's one of the famous alums of Nutria. He wrote the book on the Rolling Stones, The Sun and the Moon and the Rolling Stones. He is one of the co-creators of the now defunct, unfortunately, HBO show, Vinyl. What happened to that show?
I don't know. I mean, I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday. It's almost like it exists up in a world that I don't really understand. I mean, I basically feel like the show, you know, those shows don't come about immediately. Like, they don't automatically hit their groove. And a lot of different people worked on it. There are a lot of different storylines. And even if you look at The Sopranos, it took a couple of seasons for it to fully become The Sopranos or Mad Men. And I feel like if it had been given a little more time, but I think probably the show is so expensive because, you know, Martin Scorsese did the pilot as if it were a feature film. And you know, the stakes were so high, and there was a leadership change there, and it's just sort of like, let's just start again. And a whole other interesting story, which is that, you know, HBO is under a kind of pressure it hasn't ever been in because of Netflix and Amazon, and all of a sudden it's like a seller's market, you know. So they need to free up as much money as they can, I think, to go out and buy new shows, because they're competing with Netflix and FX and all these things that didn't exist in the TV show world just a few years ago.
He is Rich Cohn. He is speaking to us from Connecticut this morning. This is Glenn Klein on WRJN's Community Conversation. So you wrote the book on the Bears, the Monsters. You wrote the book on the Jewish mob, Tough Jews. You co-wrote Jerry Weintraub's biography. What was that entitled?
When I stop talking, you'll know I'm dead.
Yeah. Please explain to the beautiful humans, Rich, who Jerry Weintraub was. People have heard that name, I know, but they might not have known what he did and what he was all about.
Well, my relationship with Jerry began with me writing a Vanity Fair story about him. And I met him in Palm Desert. He had a house in Palm Desert, California that was like a convertible house. You pressed a button and the side of the house came outside. And he showed me his house, and he has a swimming pool that went all the way around the house like a trail, came into his bedroom under the floor and a little hole so you can get out of bed right into the pool. And I said to him, all you need is a dolphin. And he said, hey, I'm the dolphin. So I thought, I love this guy. And he's so much like my father, I felt like I could understand him. He grew up in the Bronx, you know, in the 50s. He didn't go to college. He went to the Air Force. And he's just a guy. You've seen him in movies. If you ever seen, like, he always puts himself in his movies because he's a very big, handsome guy who originally wanted to be an actor. So if you watch The Firm, go watch that. He's Sonny Capps. You know, he's this big guy, went to the Air Force, and then just loved to put on shows. And he had a dream one night when he was sort of a promoter, and in the dream he saw a neon sign that said, Jerry Weintraub presents Elvis Presley. And he had this idea, Elvis wasn't performing then, of taking Elvis into big arenas where he'd never played. And he just called Colonel Tom Parker and gave him his idea. And Colonel Tom Parker said, you know, Elvis doesn't do shows like that anymore. And we've got our own people if we decide to do them. And this is the thing that makes Jerry Jerry. Jerry called Colonel Tom Parker every day for 365 days. That was the first call he made every morning, said, I want to take Elvis on the road. And on like the 366th day, the colonel called Jerry and said, do you still want to take my boy out on the road? Jerry said, of course. He said, meet me tomorrow in Las Vegas at the Hilton with a cashier's check for $1 million, which was, you know, an astronomical amount of money. And Jerry spent 24 hours getting this money, which he borrowed from a radio guy, and he took Elvis on the road. And as Jerry said it, he went out there with Elvis and the colonel. Just a regular guy. 3 weeks later, he was a millionaire. just from being on that show. And the really funny details, when I was writing the book, I wrote the story up, and I wrote, you know, that he met him at the roulette table at the Flamingo, I think so it was. And Jerry said, "You got everything right, but one key detail. It wasn't the roulette table, it was the craps table. Because roulette's a sucker's game. You got to know that. The colonel would know it's a sucker's game."
Oh, man.
And also, the rumors that the colonel filled his swimming pool with Perrier. Not true. Not true. The man was not an idiot. But he had incredible stories. And then later on, he managed, you know, Frank Sinatra. And,
well, he was
became, like, one of the Rat Pack.
He was one of the ones. He was the one that came up with the idea to have Sinatra do his return concert at Madison Square Garden and to have him come out in a boxing ring because he's the champion.
Right. And the way he pitched it, you know, which is Sinatra was depressed. You know, they don't talk about Sinatra. Sinatra was kind of almost like he was depressive. He would get very down. And he was living in Vegas, and I think in the Caesars or one of those big hotels in the penthouse. And he was just depressed, and he said, "There's nothing more for me to do." And Jerry said, "What you need to do, Frank, is you need to perform." "Well, I performed before." "Yeah, but not like this." And he's like making it up as he goes along. He's like, "You should appear in the boxing ring like Muhammad Ali because you're the greatest."
"You're the greatest."
"And have Howard Cosell introduce you." And if you watch that show, you'll go back and watch the movie, which is a great concert. You see Jerry and Sinatra walking in together, going in through the ring, and Sinatra, you know, had this incredible show. I think it was in the mid-70s, but that was Jerry's thing. Jerry's thing was when Jerry was a kid, his father was a jeweler, and he got the world's largest sapphire that was worth nothing. This is according to Jerry. But he promoted it as the Star of Artaban. This, you know, it's like a carny kind of thing. That's why I got along with Colonel Tom Parker. Like this precious antique. And he would have all the people from the cities he went to come out to visit the Star of Artaban. And Jerry said, "And while they're looking at the Star of Artaban, he's selling them everything else in his bag." You know? And Jerry, you know, then he made the Ocean's 11, 12, and 13 movies. He made Oh God. One of my greatest, he said the biggest problem with Oh God was convincing George Burns not to wear a toupee. And he's like, "Listen, George, everybody can tell it's a toupee. And it's a problem because you're playing God. God wouldn't wear a toupee. God would just make new hair. He'd make new hair." So if you watch that movie, the solution was, because George Burns didn't want anyone to see that he was bald, was that in every scene in the movie, George Burns is wearing a different hat.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got those bad golf hats in that movie.
Right, that's why.
He's Rich Cohen. We were talking to him on WRJN's Community Conversation. Well, unfortunately, we know Jerry's dead because he ain't talking anymore. But
yeah.
Jerry literally made it up as he went. I mean, that's really what the book is all about. And one incredible story after another. What do you think that he would have thought about another guy who's clearly made it up as he's gone along, Donald J. Trump?
We never really talked about Trump. And Jerry was a Republican, first of all. And he was, you know, which was unusual in Hollywood. And the reason why he was a Republican really is because he was very close, to use a Las Vegas terminology, very close personal friends with George Bush, the elder. You know, and that was like a real friendship that went back to the early 60s, and they met in Kennebunkport, Maine. And so I think that Jerry probably knew Trump. Jerry liked people. You had to really do something for him not to like you. He was a very positive guy. Everything, it's going to be a home run. It's going to be great. He's terrific, you know. He just loved people. He was great to be around. But I have a feeling that, and he tended to make his decisions, a lot of them, based on personal feelings. So he was very close to Bush, the father. So just the fact that Trump went after Jeb the way he did would have put him on Jerry's no-good list.
Well, he's low energy, Jeb.
Yeah, and Jerry probably would have admitted that, but said that that's not, you know. Listen, I mean, there was like a really funny thing with story, which I probably shouldn't tell, which is he made a comment about George Bush, the younger George Bush, about how when he was a kid, he cleaned my boat and he didn't even do a good job at that. And I put that in like a story, and Jerry's like, "You got to take that out of there. Barbara's going to kill me." You know, so everything with Jerry was personal relationships. I mean, that's how he did his life. And even his politics, so he was very politically involved, were based on, you know, personal relationships. And the story about George Bush is Jerry was a great athlete, went to play tennis in Kennebunkport, and they wouldn't let him play at the club because he was Jewish. And George Bush found this out and said, that's just not right, you know. And he took Jerry and went with him and said, you know, Jerry Weintraub is now a member of this club, and I'm sponsoring him. So he sort of opened up that club through Jerry, and then they just became lifelong friends. And one thing about Jerry is he was incredibly loyal, and if he's friends with you and someone insults your son, then you have a problem with Jerry Weintraub.
He is Chicago Cubs fanatic, former Camp Menominee camper. By the way, we beat Cuyahoga.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear any trash talk from those Cuyahoga kids all winter.
No,
so finally,
no.
I got a winter of freedom from them.
He's also the author of the book on the Rolling Stones, The Sun and the Moon and the Rolling Stones. You can get it at Amazon, or you can get it anywhere. How are the sales been going?
Fantastic. It's really been very satisfying.
That's awesome.
Know? Because it's something that I didn't want to mess up, because the Rolling Stones have had such a crucial part of my life, and I sort of thought, well, as I was writing it, listen, if I screw this up, man, I'm not going to be able to listen to the Rolling Stones in the same way again. You know?
How did Mick like it?
Everybody liked it, you know, because it's, you know, it's actually, the books about the Rolling Stones tend to either be like sort of, you know, telling the dirt, hit pieces, or they're kind of hagiography, they're officially sanctioned band propaganda, and this actually isn't either one of those, you know. So the whole idea was to have a book that had kind of the energy and the drive of one of the Rolling Stones songs. I mean, that was my goal.
What you working on now?
I'm working on a book with Maria Sharapova.
Ooh.
Tennis player.
Yeah, we know who she is.
Yeah, and I'm just working on a bunch of magazine stories about random things. I'm trying to figure out, you know, I really want to write something about the Cubs, and hopefully, I don't want to jinx them, but at the same point, if they do what they look like they're going to do, I'd like to be there. So I'm figuring out the best way to do that, because I've written so much about the Cubs. And, you know, this Cubs is like one of those things, like the deeper you go, the better it gets. And I would just, you know, I was over at my sister's house this weekend. She had one of those beer bottle openers that where you open it, it has Harry Carey doing the home run call.
MIB! It could be! It is!
Exactly.
Holy cow!
And I sort of thought, this is something that's given me so much pleasure in my life. I'd just like to spend a year just thinking about it.
Well, if you happen to be in the Chicago or Milwaukee area around Labor Day, I got ducats for the Cubs-Brewers game at Miller Park. So,
It still makes no sense to me that the Brewers are in the National League. That's how old I am, basically.
The people in Milwaukee are happy with that, though, I got to tell you. Because it was a National League town, the Braves,
right,
had National League.
I know. It makes sense that the Cubs and the Brewers should have a rivalry like the Cubs and the Cardinals, the Red Sox and the Yankees. And if they both have great teams at the same time, that probably will happen.
Well, they're rebuilding the way the Cubs did it, the way the Theo did it, and the Ricketts. And they're very optimistic here in Brewtown.
Yeah, there's sort of the Cubs model and the Mets model, which was to go after all pitchers.
Well, we'll see what they do. They just let go of their all-star, Jonathan Lucroy, you know, their all-star catcher.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's interesting because it's sort of like the Moneyball thing. It worked until everybody else started using the same formula.
Right. You know? Well, they just keep reinventing themselves. Kind of a key to success, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Let's see. Now, I felt a little bit of the jinx come on yesterday when I was watching the Cubs-Padres game yesterday, because they had the dates of the playoffs, including when Game 7 would be. It was just, it was gut-wrenching.
You know, though, I've come to a different feeling about the jinx, which is my whole life I so carefully avoided the jinx, and the Cubs always lost. So now I think, go ahead and be like a Yankees fan. I live in the New York area. They would always talk about how they're going to win, and they usually do win. And it's interesting. I wrote a story a whole bunch of years ago, a long story where I tried to figure out why the Cubs can't win the World Series. This is like, I wrote this in 2000. That's how long ago it was. And I interviewed for that story Joe Girardi, who was with the Cubs then. At the end of his career, he'd come back to Chicago. And he said, you know, when you're in Yankee Stadium and you look around, all the pictures are of the team celebrating on the mound after winning a pennant, after winning the World Series. It's groups of guys. If you go into Wrigley Field, it's all pictures of single players having just set single player records. And I really do think that there's something to that the Cubs never really had that team thing going, at least when I lived, maybe a little bit in 84. But now they really have it.
Yeah,
I mean, they have a team, and they have a team full of young guys. And I almost think, the other thing I always think of, it's like, you know, in the Bible, the Jews have to wander across the desert for 40 years waiting for the slave generation basically to die out before they can go to the promised land.
Yeah.
I sort of think you needed a whole team of young guys who were completely untouched by the mentality the Cubs had had to sort of start new and be kind of dumb of history. And that's, to me, the key to this team, is that they're young guys and they never figured out what it means to be a Cub, so they're making it over again.
Amen, brother, from another mother. Really appreciate it. We will talk to you next month, if not before.
All right, excellent. Great talking to you, Glenn.
Your radio friend is AM 1400 WRJN, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, a Magnum.media station.
Well, on this, what is it, hump day morning, we went extra innings with Rich Cohn, but I'm sure you will agree that it was well worth it. It's 6 minutes after 10 o'clock, and WRJN covers this world.
Special report, earthquake in Italy. I'm Evan Haining. A powerful earthquake in central Italy has killed at least 73 people. In Salletta, correspondent Barbie Nadeau.